What's up? My name is MJ, and welcome to the first episode of Breaking It Down, a mini-series by On Your Left. Today we're going to be breaking down the Communist Manifesto. The Communist Manifesto, written by Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels, was first published in 1848. It formed the basis for the modern communist movement as we know it, arguing that capitalism would inevitably self-destruct to be replaced by socialism and ultimately communism. So, if you've listened to On Your Left before, you know that we've talked about what communism is and how it differs from capitalism, but I'm going to give you a quick review in case you don't remember. Communism is a philosophical, social, political, and economic ideology and movement whose ultimate goal is the establishment of a communist society, namely a socio-economic order structured upon the ideas of common ownership of the means of production and the absence of social classes, money, and the state. I'm also going to quickly go over a few vocabulary terms you should know before we start this. The bourgeoisie is the ruling class or the class of capitalists. They're the employers of wage laborers and they own the means of production. The proletariat is the class of modern wage laborers. They do not have their own means of production and therefore they have to sell their own labor in order to survive. The means of production are the physical things and the methods of working that you need to create items. So this includes tools, machines, and also skills, division of labor, all of that stuff. And it also includes knowledge that can be applied to production. The mode of production is the economic structure of a society that defines people's mode of living, so that would be feudalism or capitalism or communism, and it consists of the means of production as well as the relations of production. The relations of production are the necessary relationships between people as required for a certain form of material production. The relations of production often refer to the distribution of the means of production, the forms of possession, which is the collective and individual private property, and the distribution of the product. So the purpose of the Communist Manifesto is to explain the goals of communism as well as the theory that's underneath it. It argues that class struggles, class conflict, it's gone under a few different names, or the exploitation of one class by another, you know, the ruling class exploits the non-ruling class, the bourgeoisie exploits the proletariat, are the motivating force behind all historical developments. So everything that's ever happened in history happens because of this exploitation and because of this conflict and competition between classes. Class relationships are defined by an era's means of production, however, eventually these relationships cease to be compatible with the developing forces of production, which means basically people are like, hey, this sucks! And at this point a revolution occurs and a new class emerges as the ruling one. We see this with feudalism when people started realizing that the lord sucked and a lot of this happened with the advent of the plague is a good point where you can kind of see a transition begin to happen. We see moving from a lord society where the lord owns the land and people work on it and they give him part of their food in exchange for being able to work on the land. We see a movement from that over into more of a capitalist society. And we see this in modern society today as well. Modern society is also characterized by class conflict between the bourgeoisie and the proletariat. And this means that soon, boom, 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 this exploitative relationship is going to cause a revolution. However, this revolution will be of a different character than all previous ones. Previous revolutions simply reallocated property in favor of the new ruling class. However, by nature of their class, the members of the proletariat will have no way of appropriating property. Therefore, when they obtain control, they will destroy all ownership of private property and classes themselves will disappear, which is obviously, as I mentioned before, the goal of communism. Common ownership of private property, no classes, classless society is a big point in the Communist Manifesto. So the Communist Manifesto spends a lot of time really like hammering home this point that this development, much like Thanos, is inevitable. Another thing the manifesto talks about a lot is that capitalism is inherently unstable because of crises. So the thing with capitalism is that every once in a while it's going to have a major crisis where basically the economy collapses. A good example of this would be like the Great Depression. Another example would be the 2008 recession. And once this bubble bursts, it's going to burst hard because of the greed of the capitalist and how they keep driving profits up and up and up. And eventually people can't afford anything. And so it goes boom. So another big thing about the Communist Manifesto is that it argues that the elimination of social classes cannot come through reforms or changes in government and that a revolution is required.
Is entitled The Bourgeoisie and the Proletarians. As I mentioned before, the bourgeoisie is the ruling class and the proletarians are the working class. The manifesto opens with the famous line, "A specter is haunting Europe, the specter of communism." And this basically means all of Europe went, "No, communism, bad. Communism, when the government do things, very bad." And so the communists all assembled in London, and they wrote the manifesto, and they were like, "We want to make our views public, and we want to tell everyone what communism is." So that's what they did. They wrote the manifesto. The first thing that the manifesto tackles is that it tackles the issue of class antagonism. As I mentioned, Marx claimed that the history of all society is the history of class struggles, because throughout history we see the oppressor and the oppressed in constant opposition to each other. This fight is sometimes hidden and sometimes open. However, each time the fight ends in either a revolutionary reconstruction of society or in the classless common ruin. So basically, we're either going to have a revolution and a new form of a new mode of production, or we're going to have the destruction of society. So throughout society, we see this common thread. There always is the oppressor and the oppressed. So in feudal society, for example, because that's my favorite example, it seems like, there's feudal lords, vassals, guildmasters, apprentices, and serfs. There's a bunch of different layers. But the modern bourgeoisie that came from it is a lot more simple. It simplified it into two camps, the bourgeoisie and the proletariat. The manifesto then goes on to explain how the modern bourgeoisie rose and how it's the product of several revelations in the mode of production and of exchange. So when this developing system began, the feudal guilds couldn't provide for these increasing markets. They were growing too large too fast, and so a middle class that was manufacturing took its place. However, when markets kept growing and kept going, the manufacturer couldn't keep up with this, so we had something, a little event that you may have heard of called the Industrial Revolution. So all of these developments made the bourgeoisie more and more powerful and pushed these medieval classes into the background. This development actually was accompanied by a series of political developments as well. And so the bourgeoisie eventually gained exclusive political sway. And so the state now serves solely the bourgeoisie's interests, which basically means the state doesn't care about the proletariat. They care where the money is. They care about the bourgeoisie. A bit that I really enjoy from the manifesto is when it says, "Historically, the bourgeoisie has played quite a revolutionary role. Whenever it has gained power, it has put an end to all feudal, patriarchal, and idyllic relations. It has limited the relationships that bound people to their superiors, and now all remaining relations between men are characterized by self-interest alone. Religious fervor, chivalry, and sentimentalism have all been sacrificed. Personal worth is now measured by exchange value, and the only freedom is that of free trade. Thus, exploitation that used to be veiled by religious and political illusions is now direct, brutal, and blatant. The bourgeoisie has changed all occupations into wage laboring professions, even those that were previously honored, such as that of the doctor. Similarly, family relations have lost their veil of sentimentality and have been reduced to pure money relations." Now, this quote is actually not from the manifesto directly. It's a very simplified version from SparkNotes, because I wanted to give you this quote without all of the super fancy language so that you could really understand it and gather it more. So the Communist Manifesto continues by explaining how previous ruling classes, previous industrial classes, they need to keep the old modes of production to stay around, to survive. But the bourgeoisie is unique in that they cannot survive without revolutionizing the instruments of production. Their whole existence is based off of revolutionizing the relations of production, and with it, every relationship in society. So the uncertainties of disturbances of the modern age have forced man to face his real condition in life and his true relations with others. So because the bourgeoisie needs to constantly revolutionize, it needs a constantly expanding market because it gets bigger and bigger and bigger, which has led to a trend of globalization. Essentially, the bourgeoisie is everywhere. It's going to conquer in its own way everywhere. It creates a world after its own image, and it's going to be increasingly hard for other civilizations to sustain national sovereignty and sustain isolationism if they so choose, just because of how global the world is now. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just something that the Communist Manifesto did notice about capitalism. I personally see this as good and bad. I think globalization is good because we can help learn from each other. We can trade things we need. So for example, if one country doesn't have enough of this material, they can get it from somewhere else. It promotes relationships with other people who are unlike us. And I think that's a good thing. But I also don't like the way capitalism does it in this sense, because everyone becomes dependent on the bourgeoisie. It makes everyone conform to what the bourgeoisie wants. So I think there's definitely pros and cons of this. But then again, that's just my personal opinion. That's not something that was said in the manifesto. I'm not going to go over this super hard because I really talked about it more in the beginning, but another thing that Marx discusses in this little section is the concept of crises and how capitalism is inherently unstable. So commercial crises arise due to overproduction, which is threatening the existence of the bourgeoisie society. And it's actually really ironic because in attempting to fix these crises, the bourgeoisie simply caused new and more extensive crises to emerge and diminish their ability to prevent future ones. They make their own system more and more unstable by just slapping a band-aid over it. So eventually, the weapons by which the bourgeoisie overcame feudalism are now being turned on the bourgeoisie themselves. So after Marx finishes talking about the bourgeoisie, the history, the nature of it, etc., he moves on to the proletariat, and this is going to be another bit from Spark Notes. Thank you. As the bourgeoisie developed, so did the proletariat, as it is the proletariat who will eventually destroy the bourgeoisie. The proletarians live only as long as they can find work, and they can find work only as long as their labor increases capital. They are a commodity, and they are vulnerable to all fluctuations of the market. Due to the development of machines and the division of labor, the proletarian's work has lost all charm. The proletarian is simply an appendage of a machine. Furthermore, as his work becomes more repulsive, his wage only decreases. Marx describes the worker as a soldier and as a slave. Distinctions of age and sex are becoming less important as all people are simply instruments of labor. Furthermore, no sooner does the worker get his wages from his exploitative boss than he is exploited by the other bourgeoisie, such as his landlord. Marx also explains how the lower portion of the middle class, like tradespeople, also sink into the proletariat because they lack sufficient capital, and technology has rendered their specialized skills no longer useful, because why pay a person to do it if a machine can do it much, much cheaper? So the proletariat really started out society by being weak. They wanted to revive the medieval status of the worker, but they were still disorganized, they were divided over large swaths of land in competition with one another so that they can survive. So when they did form unions, they were under the influence of the bourgeoisie and actually served to further the objectives of it. However, when modern industry developed, the proletariat increased in number. It got a lot stronger, a lot more concentrated, and so distinctions among laborers began to dissolve. Everyone had equally low wages, everyone had equally unsure livelihoods, everyone was upset. So workers began to form trade unions and other associations. The proletariat is further helped in its unification by the increased means of communication that was made possible by industrial industry, allowing for struggles to take on a national character. So while the organization of the proletariat into a class is continually destroyed by competition among workers, each time it rises again stronger. And in a word, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Furthermore, as other classes try to use the proletarians to forward their own political ends, they give them tools to fight the bourgeoisie. Marx also expresses that historically the proletariat are unique because in the past when someone got the upper hand, it tried to subject all of society to its own mode of appropriation. However, the proletariat lack any property of their own to retain or expand. Rather, they must destroy all ways of securing private property at all. Another unique characteristic of the proletariat is that while past movements were started by minorities, the proletariats are a vast, vast majority and are acting in the interest of that majority. The proletarian struggle is first and foremost a national struggle. Marx writes that he has traced the proletariat's development through a veiled civil war up to the point of open revolution and the violent overthrow of the bourgeoisie. Until now, every society has been based on class oppression. In order for a class to be oppressed, however, its slavish existence must be sustainable, held steady. In contrast, laborers in modern industrial society are continually suffering a deterioration of their status. They become poorer and poorer. The bourgeoisie are thus unfit to rule because they cannot guarantee an existence to its slave within its slavery. Thus, with the development of modern industry, the bourgeoisie produces its own grave diggers, its fall, and the victory of the proletariat that are equally inevitable. Something that I'd like to state before we move on to the second section is that I don't really like how Marx equates a lot of this to slavery. While I understand what he's trying to express, I think that the term slavery is, that slavery in general is something that shouldn't be compared to other things. Like, yes, you could argue that wage labor is a form of slavery. And I agree that wage labor is completely unfair, but I think just using the term slavery could be, it is very, very sensitive and should not be thrown around lightly. So that was my little statement for Spark Notes and Marx, that the term slavery shouldn't be used unless it's actual slavery. So yeah. Section 2 of the Communist Manifesto is entitled The Proletarians and the Communists. So Marx begins this chapter by declaring that communists have no interests apart from the interests of the working class as a whole. Marx then moves on to a new kind of format where he responds to criticisms from an imagined bourgeoisie person. Marx first addresses the claim that no one will work if private property is abolished. However, by this logic, the bourgeoisie society should have been overcome with laziness long, long ago. In reality, it is presently the case that those who don't work don't acquire anything, and those who acquire things don't work. Other opponents hold that communism will destroy all intellectual products. However, this reflects a bourgeoisie misunderstanding. The disappearance of class culture is not the same thing as the disappearance of all culture. Marx moves to the arguments against the infamous communist proposal of abolishing the family. He says the modern family is based on capital and private gain. Thus, he writes, the communists plead guilty to wanting to do away with present familial relations, in that what they want is to stop the exploitation of children by their parents. Similarly, they do not want to altogether abolish the education of children, but to simply free it from the control of the ruling class. Marx complains that the bourgeoisie claptrap about family and education is particularly disgusting, as industry increasingly destroys the family ties of the proletarians. Thus, it renders family and education as a means for the transformation of children into articles of commerce. What Marx is saying is he doesn't want to do away with family, with the love, with the bond that comes with family, but with the associations of money and how some parents, at the time at least, exploited their children to earn more money, you know. How parents would have a bunch of kids and have them go work out in the field. That was one of the main reasons for having a bunch of kids, to have new workers. So Marx simply wanted to put an end to that, not put an end to having a family and loving someone and having a spouse and having children with them. That's not what he was talking about at all. Marx also responded to people who criticized communists for their desire to abolish country and nationality. Marx said that working men have no country and that we can't take away from them what they don't have. National differences and antagonisms lose significance as industrialization increasingly standardizes life. Marx then does away with a lot of other arguments, saying that arguments against communism that are based on religion, philosophy, or ideology are not deserving of serious examination. Marx then begins to discuss exactly how this revolution is going to work. So the first step is to make the proletariat the ruling class. It will then use its power to seize all capital from the bourgeoisie and to centralize all instruments of production. Of course, in the beginning, this will not be possible without, as Marx said, despotic inroads on the rights of property and on the conditions of the bourgeoisie production. Probable steps after that will include the abolition of the ownership of land, the institution of a heavy progressive or graduated income tax, the abolition of all inheritance rights, the confiscation of immigrants' and rebels' property, making all people liable to labor, state centralization of credit, state centralization of communication and transportation, state appropriation of factories, and the gradual combination of agriculture and manufacturing industries, and the elimination of distinctions between town and country, and the establishment of free education for children. When class distinctions have disappeared, public power will lose its political character. This is because political power is nothing more than, as Marx said, the organized power of one class for oppressing another. When the proletariat eliminate the old conditions of production, they will render class antagonisms impossible, and thereby eliminate their own class supremacy. Bourgeoisie society will be replaced by an association in which the free development of each is the condition for the free development of all. In section 3, which is titled Socialist and Communist Literature, Marx presents and critiques three different subsets of socialist and communist literature. The first one that he critiques is reactionary socialism, which includes feudal socialists, the petty bourgeoisie socialists, and the German or true socialists. Feudal socialists were aristocrats who wrote against the modern bourgeoisie in society. However, the only reason they did it is because the revolutionary proletariat will uproot the old order of society. Thus, they objected to the bourgeoisie because they saw it as a threat to their way of life. They didn't actually care about the working class, they just really wanted things to go back to the way that they were. With the petty bourgeoisie, Marx conceded that their publication successfully showed the contradictions of the conditions of the modern production. However, their suggested alternatives to this contradictory system were either to restore the old means of production and exchange, or to push the modern means of production and exchange into the framework of old property relations. Thus, this socialism is, in Marx's words, reactionary and utopian and can't accept the facts of history. Finally is the German thinkers, or the true socialists. They adopted French socialist and communist ideas without realizing that Germany did not share the same social conditions as France. Basically, these socialists supported the aristocracy and feudal institutions against the rising bourgeoisie, forgetting that the rise of the bourgeoisie is a necessary historical step. The true socialists support the interests of the petty bourgeoisie and thus support the status quo. They even rejected class struggles. Marx claims that almost all of the so-called communist and socialist literature in Germany at this time are in fact of this character. The second subset of socialism is conservative or bourgeoisie socialism. The subset reflects the desires of a segment of the bourgeoisie to redress social grievances in order to guarantee the continued existence of the bourgeoisie society. Followers of this idea include economists, philanthropists, humanitarians, improvers of the condition of the working class, organizers of charity, members of societies for the prevention of cruelty to animals, temperance fanatics, and hole-and-corner reformers of every kind, according to Marx. They want the advantages of the social conditions generated by modern industry without the struggles and dangers that necessarily accompany them. They wish for a bourgeoisie without the proletariat. The final subset is critical utopian socialism and communism. The subset originated when the first attempts of the proletariat to achieve their own ends failed. The attempts were reactionary, and the proletariat had not yet reached the maturity and the economic conditions necessary for emancipation. These socialists therefore looked for new social laws to create the material conditions necessary to free the proletariat. Their writings are important because they attacked every principle of existing society and are thus useful for enlightening the working class. However, they are very, very utopian. Although their vision did reflect authentic proletariat yearnings to reconstruct society, it was ultimately a fantastic and unrealistic vision, providing no basis for practical action, which is why Marx critiqued them as well. The final section of the Communist Manifesto is entitled Position of the Communists in Relation to the Various Existing Opposition Parties. The manifesto concludes with a discussion about the role of the communists as they work with other parties. The communists fight for immediate aims of workers, but always in the context of the entire communist movement. Thus, they work with those political parties that will forward the ends of communism, even if it involves working with the bourgeoisie. However, they will never stop trying to instill the working class a recognition of the hostile antagonism between the bourgeoisie and the proletariat, to help them gain the weapons to eventually overthrow the bourgeoisie. Thus, the communists everywhere support the revolutionary movement against the existing social and political order of things. They openly declare that their ends can be attained only by forcibly overthrowing all existing social conditions. The manifesto ends with this rallying cry: "Let the ruling class tremble at a communistic revolution. The proletarians have nothing to lose but their chains. They have a world to win. Working men of all countries, unite." The Communist Manifesto is inarguably one of the most important works in leftist literature and communist literature, and I think it's something that every leftist should read. I personally don't think it should be a baby communist's first read, just because the language is so hard to understand, unless you choose to do something like buy the simplified version or read about it first on SparkNotes. I highly recommend the little SparkNotes thing on it. It gives a really good summary of what it is, and then after that you can go through and read the Communist Manifesto and get more of the detail and stuff like that. I personally have done both. I first read the manifesto, which was very hard for me to understand, but I did get through it. And then I went back and I read the Spark Notes after, and I was like, oh, that's what that meant. So I personally don't think it should be a baby leftist's first book. If you're looking for a book to really like introduce you to some of these concepts, I'd recommend basically anything by Angela Davis. Her work is fantastic. It's straight to the point. It's easy to understand. In general, I recommend work by Black Marxists or people of color, because it's a lot more applicable to modern day than reading something by an old Russian dude. That's not to say that a lot of these books by, you know, the old Russian dudes aren't important, because they are. Like I said, the Communist Manifesto is one of the most important works in leftism, but I would definitely start out with by POC books. That's it for Breaking It Down, the Communist Manifesto, and I can't wait to see you guys next week. Bye!